From KCRW in Santa Monica and KCRW.com, I'm Kim Masters, and this is The Business.
You listen, if you listen and learn, then you're going to be able to do anything you want in this town.
Everybody thinks show business is really, really all right life. He doesn't claim.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone Hollywood.
This week on The Business, the creators of the acclaimed TV drama Damages. They talk about making a new home on DirecTV after FX canceled their show last year. Plus, one last story from our Moth Story Slam. This one takes us to the dark side of I Love Lucy. But first, it's the Hollywood News Banter. Stick around, it's The Business from KCRW.
You can imagine Hollywood, everything is really driven by
making money.
What's with him?
Oh, I'm afraid he's gone to Hollywood.
I'm joined by my fellow banterer, John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Hello, John.
Hello, Kim.
So, John, the Lone Ranger, is he riding into the sunset? I am alluding, of course, to the gigantic Jerry Bruckheimer-produced, Gore Verbinski-directed, Johnny Depp-starring project at Disney. That is the team that brought you more than one Pirates of the Caribbean. And this was a staggeringly expensive project, a Western, but still. They have worked the budget down to around $250 and are trying to work it down even farther, supposedly, or the plug is going to be permanently pulled.
Yeah, and that would be $250 million, not $250. A million here, a million there. Pretty soon you're talking real numbers. They are trying to downsize it, and I guess the question is, can they make a little Lone Ranger? Now, $200 million is still a lot of money, but it is an interesting dilemma where Disney is essentially squaring off against one of the studio's most prolific and successful producers. I mean, you mentioned the Pirates of the Caribbean movies. Those alone have global grosses of $3.7 billion.
Wow.
But Rich Ross, who is the new head of Disney, is trying to tighten the spending at the studio. He put 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea kind of on a delayed turnaround when he was not at all happy with the direction of that movie or and its budget. And I guess the question is, who blinks here? Does Gore Verbinski and Jerry Bruckheimer and Johnny Depp walk, or do they make the movie at a smaller price?
I'm going to go out on the prediction limb. I think this movie is not going to happen with this team. I think that Disney is trying to position itself as trying to operate in good faith because they don't want to upset. I think Johnny Depp is the one they really care about. I think Gore Verbinski has gone over budget consistently. His last project at Universal was also canceled because of money concerns. So I think the one they really, really care about here is Johnny Depp. He's the one who was in Alice. He was the one who was in Pirates. He is the one who could be in God knows what down the road. They don't want to step too hard on his toes. But I think that really, this thing at this price, I don't think Verbinski's going to come down, and I think they will be able to wrap it around him. Of course, they got themselves very, very pregnant with this thing. They were supposed to start shooting in October or November in New Mexico.
They were already building sets in New Mexico. No, this was well along the way. I'm going to take the contrary opinion. The last Pirates of the Caribbean movie, Disney shaved the budget from $300 million to $200 million. Gore Verbinski was out and Rob Marshall came in to direct it, but Johnny Depp was still in the movie. So I'm going to say they're going to be able to work it out at a lower fee.
All right. The bet is on and we will see. Meanwhile, boy, if you wanted a gun to smoke in the phone hacking scandal, one of the stories that we've been following very closely because it involves News Corp and the Murdoch empire and they and couldn't be a more existential threat to that empire and the Murdoch family's control. There were a couple of letters released in Britain this past week, which appear to be a complete smoking gun, discrediting the parliamentary testimony of Rupert Murdoch and his son, James, when they claimed that this was something they didn't really know about and that they, you know, were shocked that there was this hacking going on. And one of these is a letter from Clive Goodman, the Royals reporter, who had gone to jail in connection with this hacking scandal and was supposed to be the rogue, the one guy, the bad apple who did this hacking.
No, and he thought he was going to get his job back. He thought he was taking one for the team. He thought he was going to be treated well by the company, and they ended up sacking him. And so he wrote a letter to the paper's human resources department and copied some very important people on that letter, in which he said that phone hacking was discussed in the daily editorial conference, that the decision about hacking was discussed with other members of the staff who were carrying out the same illegal procedures. So essentially what he said is the very people who claim not to know about this practice, and that would include Andy Coulson, who was editor of News of the World, who went on to be the spokesman for Prime Minister David Cameron, and Les Hinton, who's a former News International executive who ended up rounding Dow Jones, knew exactly what was going on. And when they testified to the contrary, if you read this letter, in the spirit of which was written, we're actually not telling the truth.
Yes, that we don't want to say the L word, lying, because if he's telling the truth, they were lying. And as were the Murdochs, apparently, because their law firm also wrote a letter. Rupert Murdoch and his son had testified, you know, James Murdoch said that this law firm, this British law firm, had looked into the hacking and told them that everything was contained and there was no problem there, really. And now the law firm is coming to its own defense and saying, hey, you know what? You never really asked us that. And we never said it.
Yeah. Not only did they say that, they said that part of their testimony was, quote, hard to credit, quote, self-serving, and, quote, inaccurate and misleading. So you know you've really got problems when your own law firm is going after you.
But it does look like these guys will have to come back before Parliament, certainly James. I don't know what they're going to do with Rupert. I really, honestly, this is uncharted territory to have these kind of powerful, powerful owners of a gigantic media empire in this kind of predicament. It just, if it were politics, you could go to Watergate. But for a corporation of this nature and this kind of global reach, I don't know what do they do to them? I don't know what comes next.
I will wait and see.
Thank you, John.
Thank you, Kim.
That's John Horn of the Los Angeles Times. Lawyers have long provided fodder for TV writers, and many shows follow the old Perry Mason formula of locking up a case by the end of the episode. But on the TV series Damages, starring Glenn Close and Rose Byrne, each case takes up a whole season. Unlike many of its predecessors, the show also focuses on the private lives of its complicated characters. When a show involves serialized storytelling, watching TV is a little bit more like watching a book, which can make it challenging for prospective viewers who didn't get in at the beginning or don't want to commit to watching every week. So nowadays, TV executives tend to be a little leery of serialized shows, which are becoming scarce on the broadcast networks. But as broadcast backed off of serialized dramas, basic cable stepped in. In 2008, Damages and Mad Men became the first basic cable shows ever to get Emmy nominations in the Best Drama category. Damages was also nominated for numerous Golden Globes, and Glenn Close won for Best Actress in a Drama.
Well, if it isn't the maid of honor. Thought you might need a breather.
Miss Hughes, what are you doing here?
I had to meet you.
Why?
Because, kiddo, you're the first person stupid enough to turn me down. I'm glad I'm not in your shoes. Family toasts, public displays of affection, absolute torture. Bourbon?
Last year, after three seasons and dwindling audience numbers, FX canceled the show. In fact, FX chief John Landgraf said publicly that he'd have to be crazy to greenlight a show like that today. And that would have been the end of it if Sony Television, which produces Damages, hadn't joined with the show's creators to find a new home on DirecTV. The satellite provider had already given a second life to the football series, Friday Night Lights, though that show continued to air on NBC. Damages can be found on DirecTV and DirecTV only, to the joy of some fans and the sorrow of others who don't have dishes on their houses. I recently spoke with the creators of Damages, Daniel Zellman and the brothers Glenn and Todd Kessler, who were in New York shooting the show's fourth season. They talked about life on DirecTV, but first, Glenn explained how he and his partners sold the show to FX in the first place.
So basically, we presented a concept, and it was pretty in-depth, and by the time we were done, John Landgraf, who is and was the head of the network, kind of sat back. We didn't really know where we stood because he was kind of expressionless for about an hour. And then he said, we'd love to be in business with you. So he, in effect, bought it in the room. And in that very first meeting, he asked us if we had ever thought of Glenn Close for that role because she had done a season of The Shield for them, for FX. And they were very eager to get her back on the network.
So, Todd, in season three, you are not doing a great number. You're down to around, at one point, like 600,000 viewers. What do you think is the cause of that? I mean, what are you DVR'd, or what's happening there?
The show was the most DVR'd series that FX had, and either I don't remember which season, but one of the seasons, it may have been the second most DVR'd series on basic cable. So those numbers meant that people were watching it, but it didn't translate for ad revenue. The advertisers don't care about DVR numbers because they assume that everyone fast forwards through commercials.
Right.
But this is Daniel. It's always been an interesting thing and a challenge for us in terms of understanding the viewership of the show, because this very same factors that were being held up at times, perhaps rightly so, I'm not debating them, for keeping an audience away from the show, that it was very complex, heavily serialized, complicated, hard for an audience to just join in the middle, all those things. Are the people who love the show, it's exactly what they love about it.
Right.
So we're presented with this dilemma, which I think, you know, we early on just said, you know, this is the show. We're just making the show that we make. And, you know, we're not going to just suddenly change what the show is midstream. But, you know, it's an interesting position to be in when you know you have very avid fans. And, you know, we knew early on that the fans of the show were avid, and we could read that, you know, on the internet. But at the same time, there, you know, those qualities can be a turnoff for other audience members who are looking for something, you know, easier to watch when they get home at night and before they go to bed, you know.
Did Landgraf come to you and say, could you make it dumber, or did he just say this isn't working?
No, he always ended up on the side of the show is the show.
He didn't start to ask us to have close-ended stories, which could have made it easier for an audience to dip in and dip out.
Right.
He was smart enough to know that if you just completely try to change what it is, you're going to lose the passionate fans that you have. So
I do want to ask you, I mean, the irony, in a way, that John Landgraf, who had been the early champion of your show, kind of made you the poster child for, you know, the type of serialized drama that these networks are now somewhat afraid to make. You know, he publicly stated that he couldn't do a show like yours and that it was not worth the expense of doing. I mean, I'm sure he didn't mean it to come across that way, perhaps, but it kind of did.
I don't think he's trying to distance himself from his decision to put it on. I think he's kind of bemoaning the fact that it would be difficult to do it again. Yeah, we can't speak for John, but, you know, he was as proud as all of us that, you know, in its first season when it got a nomination for Best Drama from the Emmys, he was right there with us, you know, and Mad Men. We were the first two shows ever in basic cable to be nominated for Best Drama.
Well, so can I ask you how you felt when you read that he had said that in a public forum?
Taken out of context, it doesn't feel good. Taken in the context of our relationship with John, we have a deeper understanding of what he means. But, you know, the press, as you said, you know, it made us and Damages the poster child for a type of show he would never do again. Well, that doesn't sound great, you know.
No. You know, one of the things about John, and we benefited greatly from this in terms of our creative partnership with him, is he's very candid. You know, it's not just this example. Like, he'll often say things that I think other heads of networks wouldn't say.
Right.
And I think he's honest. I think he's just saying, in terms of how Damages turned out, in terms of the viewership, that he's very gun-shy from doing a show like that again, and he wouldn't do it again. And so, yeah, I think maybe we felt, well, that was a little blunt or a little something. But we know him, as Todd said, it's all in the context of our relationship with him. And that same bluntness also worked in our favor when we were on FX, because we never felt he was playing games with us.
Right.
We always knew that when he said something, he meant it.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with the creators of the legal drama Damages, starring Glenn Close and Rose Byrne. Damages is currently in its fourth season and runs exclusively on the satellite TV provider DirecTV. In this season, the antagonist is played by John Goodman, a character who runs a Blackwater-type private security force under contract with the government. Goodman is just the latest in a long line of top actors who have played roles on Damages, including Ted Danson, William Hurt, Marcia Gay Harden, Martin Short, Lily Tomlin, and others. In fact, many assume that Damages is expensive to produce, in part because of this top-tier talent. But as series co-creator Todd Kessler says,
similar to like a Woody Allen movie, we've set a kind of equitable rate that the big guest characters are taking pay cuts and could make a lot more money going on to a network show or potentially even a pay cable or basic cable show. But there's been a parody, and they've come on the show, and we've been very grateful to them for that.
It's almost like home for actors who want to act, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that's part of it. You know, and one of the reasons that we're able to work with these people and they want to do a show like Damages is because of the serialized nature of the episodes, and that they get to play a character who has a beginning, middle, and end over either 10 hours in the fourth season or 13 hours in the first three seasons. The three of us, Todd, Dale, and I, we kind of put the actors at the top of the totem pole in terms of trying to create things that are worthy of their talents.
So when you moved to DirecTV, Daniel, was the budget really affected?
We have been more financially constrained than we were in previous seasons, but we've always been financially constrained anyway.
So do you have to renegotiate with the actors?
No, they did not take a hit with the budget.
Did you have to kill somebody?
Well, we had.
I mean, that you wouldn't necessarily have killed?
Well, we killed someone who we would have killed regardless.
Yes. Yeah. Daniel gets very serious when he talks about killing, so yeah. Getting into tricky territory.
Story-wise, we had killed Tate Donovan's character, and he was a series regular. So that just kind of worked out that we had some relief on the casting budget because of that anyway.
So Todd, you know, is there a DirecTV rating or something that they look at that would be lower than an FX need? I don't quite know how the DirecTV business works.
What they've explained to us is that, you know, they're in the business to sell subscriptions to DirecTV, and that if they get someone, a very lucky, wise customer to sign up for DirecTV, that people tend to stick with DirecTV, and I think they said it takes them about 6 weeks from the time an episode airs to see if it has any impact, as opposed to the network life of after the first commercial break, you know, the phone starts ringing of what the quarter of the hour viewership / drop off might be.
Now, one of the things when you switched, you know, I saw a lot of stuff on the internet, which was, I'm sure you probably saw it too, you know, a lot of fans saying, oh, God bless DirecTV, and then a whole lot of fans saying, I don't like DirecTV. I don't have DirecTV. I can't get it. I don't want it. How do people get it if they can't get it through DirecTV?
It's kind of a double-edged sword. You know, there are people who are very frustrated that it's on DirecTV, but it wouldn't exist if it wasn't on DirecTV. So, you know, we're glad that they're interested in seeing the show, and it's gratifying to understand, like, the subtext of their frustration is that they enjoy it enough that they actually want to see it.
I imagine that frustration is exactly what DirecTV is hoping for, because, you know, they're hoping that frustration turns into, all right, damn it, I'll get DirecTV already.
Right.
But, you know, the thing about DirecTV is we all have DirecTV, I believe. And
you do now, right?
I know I have. No, I had it from very early on. I think it's incredible. The sports packages are incredible, and there's no substitute for them. But it's not just that. It's the way the whole satellite system is organized.
We're going to run an ad now for DirecTV on public radio.
My only point is that it's very easy for me, Damages or no Damages, to say you should get DirecTV.
All right. That was Daniel, I think.
It was. And it's important that you label that, because I'm expecting the kickbacks.
Daniel Zellman, Glenn Kessler, and Todd Kessler are the creators of Damages, the TV drama starring Glenn Close and Rose Byrne. It's currently airing on the DirecTV channel Audience Network Wednesdays at 10 p.m. The past three seasons are available on iTunes and on DVD. Thank you guys so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was great to talk to you.
Coming up after a short break, the winning story from our Moth Story Slam, The Dark Side of I Love Lucy. To leave a comment about today's show, go to our Facebook page, KCRW's The Business. You're listening to The Business from KCRW and KCRW.com. This is The Business, and I'm Kim Masters. As many of you know, we co-hosted a competitive event called A Story Slam in Santa Monica with The Moth, a nonprofit dedicated to the art of storytelling. There was a record-breaking turnout, and we heard some very strong stories on various aspects of the business, from being an extra in the Will Smith movie, I Am Legend, to being mistaken for a movie star and getting out of a speeding ticket. Today we'll run one last story from our Moth Story Slam, the story that won the night. Here's MC Brian Finkelstein introducing Moth regular Bill Ratner, who told that tale.
Keep applauding for the always amazing Bill Ratner.
So my Uncle Bobby was an actor in I Love Lucy. He was Bobby the Bellboy. And he was my hero as a little kid. But my family said, we're Midwesterners. He left the Midwest. He lives in Hollywood. You're never going to meet him. But he had been in the Midwest. He was a radio actor. But as soon as his episodes of I Love Lucy aired, he was an instant TV celebrity. He loved his fans, and so he would sign their autographs, and he would do dialogue from the show if they asked. And he'd go, knock, knock, Mrs. Ricardo, it's Bobby. Hey, you know that little green ballroom gown of yours? I got it all nice and dry clean for you. Oh, and here's another dozen roses from Ricky. I waited for years to get an invitation from my uncle to come to Hollywood and hang out on the set with Lucy and Ricky. It never came. I never heard from him. I had no birthday cards, no Christmas cards, no invitation to Disneyland, nothing. And his career ended in about 1961 with the show when it went off the air. He got a couple of bit parts for Bob Hope specials at NBC, and then by the time he turned 50, he was selling suits at Macy's. So his acting career was over. Years later, I came to L.A. to look him up. He lived in a little garden apartment in Westwood with my aunt. And I walked in and introduced myself, and I knew my aunt. Here is my uncle, Bobby, the bellboy, sitting in a wheelchair, asleep, wearing white flannel pajamas. And my aunt elbows him awake. And who knows what meds he's on or where his consciousness is. And he looks at me with bloodshot eyes. Who's this? It's your nephew. Give me a cigarette. We don't smoke with guests here. And she pours us some cranberry juice and leaves. He reaches around the back of his wheelchair and pulls out a half pint of Kentucky Tavern bourbon and takes a long, comfortable pull on it and puts it back in a little pouch. And I was so excited to finally meet him, I had brought a tape recorder to do an interview. Put the tape recorder away. I'm sick of talking about Lucy. That red-haired bitch and her greaseball husband cheated me out of more money than I could ever count. The month that he was hired by Desi Arnaz to do the show in 1954, the Screen Actors Guild had finally started winning contracts to force the studios to pay actors residuals for reruns. But Desi Arnaz, just before SAG got to Desi Lu, had all the I Love Lucy actors sign buyout agreements, the contents of which were never made public and which prevented them from ever making claims on the future of the show. 1961, 153 episodes going to syndication, making hundreds of millions of dollars for CBS and the estates of Desi Arnaz and Lucille Ball. My Uncle Bobby died of liver disease in St. John's Hospital. I wanted to find out more about him, and he didn't have any relatives out here at all. So I went to the UCLA Film and TV Archive, and the radio archivist, a guy named Ron Moeller, said, Robert Jellison was your uncle? And he takes me down this hallway into this room that's about the size of a broom closet. It's got a turntable and a big stack of 12-inch acetate discs labeled in Braille. And like a lot of radio archivists, he was blind. And he starts working the stack with his fingers, and he stops in the middle, and he yanks out a disc and puts it on the turntable and says, your uncle performed the longest death scene in the history of serial dramatic radio. I'm not supposed to do this, but I'll make you a copy. And he lowers the tone arm down onto the disc. This is an episode of Harvard Detective, NBC Chicago, 1948. All right, you rat, I'm going to kill you. No, 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 Vinny, please. I swear I didn't rat on nobody. It was the unmistakable voice of my Uncle Bobby. I swear on my mother's grave. Proper cemeteries don't take people like your mother. Bang, bang, bang. No, Vinny, no, no, no. And kerthwomp, my uncle falls to the floor. This goes on for a full 60 seconds. Dum, 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 dum. Tune in again next week for another episode of Harbor Detective. Foghorn sounds in the distance. My Aunt Ellie kept Bobby's ashes on a shelf above his old RCA television set. And I thought it'd be a nice memento to give her the cassette of Harbor Detective to sit next to his ashes. And then I realized she didn't need to hear his extended death scene. 2011 is the 60th anniversary of I Love Lucy. And still, to this day, it makes $10 million a year in syndication. So my Uncle Bobby, Bobby the Bellboy, lives on in an unpaid firmament of black and white pixels.
Bill Ratner.
Hi, Miss Ricardo.
Hi, Bobby. Hey, Bobby, maybe you can help us.
Sure, what can I do for you?
Well, listen, Ricky's picture was shelved.
Yeah, I know, I saw it in Variety.
Yeah, well, Mr. Dory Sherry is coming up to our apartment in a few minutes to have a little talk with Ricky.
Gosh, can I bring you up some ice water? I've never even seen Dory Sherry.
No, I'm afraid not, Bobby. There's going to be too much going on. Now, look, I have a plan. I thought if we had another big producer there that was just dying to put Ricky under contract, then Mr. Sherry wouldn't fire Ricky, see?
You know, you're right. These big producers always want you when somebody else wants you. What a bunch of eggheads.
Yeah. Say that again. Well, you know where we can find an actor real quick that could play the producer? We'll pay $10.
Producer, huh?
Uh-huh.
Now, see here, Dory. I simply must have Ricardo for my next picture.
Oh, no, Bobby. I'm afraid you're not the type.
I got shoes that make me 4 inches higher.
4 inches higher? How do you look?
Well, I look all right, but my ears pop.
Thanks anyway.
Everybody's a dreamer. And everybody's a star. And everybody's in movies. It doesn't matter who you are. There are stars in every city, in every house and on every street. And if you walk down Hollywood Boulevard, their names are written in concrete. Don't step on Greta Garbo as you walk down the boulevard. She looks so weak and fragile. That's why she tried to be so hard.
And that's The Business. Darby Maloney produced and edited today's program with production assistance from Ray Guarna. We had help this week from Jenny Radlett, and we thank our outgoing intern, Chloe Shipko, who's going back to school. And thanks also to everyone who supported KCRW during our recent fun drive. And special thanks to The Moth. To leave a comment about today's show, go to our Facebook page, KCRW's The Business, or post on our website, kcrw.com/thebusiness, where you can stream or podcast the show. You can also listen to us on demand on your iPhone, Android, or BlackBerry with our KCRW apps. And you can always subscribe to the podcast through iTunes. The Business is produced and distributed by KCRW Santa Monica. I'm Kim Masters. We'll see you next week on The Business.